from the Carter Subaru Studios. This is the G and Ursula Show with G Scott and Ursula Royteen.
And by G Scott and Ursula Royteen, they actually mean Aaron Mason and Mike Lewis.
Don't sound so excited, Mike.
I am excited. It's actually dynamite to be back in working with you.
Yeah.
When there's daylight.
I know. How about it?
We spent a long time on the Cairo Nights show together. It is delightful to be in here in the daytime and see everyone at Cairo. And we have got, it's Fresh Friday. What's the origin of Fresh Friday, Andrew?
The origin of Fresh Friday is during the pandemic, we were all working from home and he wanted to spice things up. So we decided we would actually dress like we were going into the office. So I continued to wear my pajamas and G dressed up.
And you certainly look, Aaron looks like he's got a fresh t-shirt on. All right. So we've got a good hour coming up. Coming up, we got 10:30 is Mike Salk from 710 Seattle Sports. There's a chance we may make him talk about soccer, although if we say that and he's listening right now, he may not show up.
Yeah.
We've got scenarios coming up. If you'd like for us to take a crack at one of your scenarios, text us at 888-973-5476. But right now, let's bring in Michael Medven from 770 KTTH.
What's new at 10?
Michael.
Hello there. Can you hear me?
You are out there.
Hey, we can hear you.
We can hear you just great. Michael, let's just get right to it. There is no bigger political or legal story in the nation than what leaked out of the Supreme Court over the weekend. Let's start with the draft opinion itself. Do you see any significant potential for the decision to be rewritten or for two justices to flip and reverse course entirely?
For the latter, no. I don't think that there are going to be two justices who flip. I think it's going to be rewritten. And I think some of the more striking language that Justice Alito put into the decision, into the opinion, are probably going to be struck. For instance, at one point he says that Roe v. Wade was egregiously wrong, which... And says something about the seven justices who voted for it back in 1973. And I think some of that explosive language is probably going to be turned down, but it's not going to change the real impact of the decision, which is not to outlaw abortion. Let's make that clear. It is to throw this entire matter back to the states. So for those of us, and I'm one of them, who really, I find it so uncomfortable and destructive and unnecessary to continue agitating over this abortion issue and simply allow the normal legal processes to take their course. There's going to be no way that the Congress of the United States overturns this decision even after it becomes official, which will probably be sometime in June.
Well, do you think that let's talk about that for a second. If, for example, this does become the opinion of the court, because everyone's reacting like it's already happened. It hasn't happened yet, but I don't know. It's a draft opinion that looked pretty well put together. It may be some minor changes. And like you said, these are going to be language changes, but not effectual changes to the sum of the decision. Do you think that this is something that is going to, at a federal level, it essentially remove the feds' authority over the right to an abortion and remand it to the states? I mean, that's really what the effort is here, correct?
That's exactly right. Yes. No, there's going to be no change at all for the state of Washington, for instance. We had legalized abortion before Roe v. Wade. We were the first state to do it. And New York had legalized abortion, and California had legalized abortion. There were already 20 states that had legalized abortion before Roe was adjudicated, and they just go back to where they were.
But doesn't that then make it effectively not available for folks in many other states?
But for other states, in other words, particularly those states that have what they call a trigger mechanism, where they've actually passed laws that says if Roe is overturned, then this will be our new law. Now, all of this will be hashed out legally. It has to go before legislatures. I think this will be a very big issue in states where abortion may be have some support, and yet they have moved to very radical. I think that limiting abortion to the first 6 weeks of pregnancy, which is before many people even know they're pregnant, I think that's going to be very tough to sustain, and there will be drives to redo those laws. And what it means is that instead of dealing with some of the dire problems we have in the country, we're going to spend a tremendous amount of energy and tears and anger and shouting and craziness arguing about abortion and arguing between 15 weeks and 6 weeks. And I think the entire process that we're about to enter into is not going to be healthy for the country.
Yeah. What I want to ask you, Michael, about something that was said in the or written in Justice Alito's opinion, where and it seems to have a lot of people really worried. And I'm going to do a very poor and loose paraphrase, but basically the idea that this is not a guarantee that was written into the Constitution, and it's not an established part of the American history or life, and so therefore it's not guaranteed. And so a lot of folks are worried that this might open the door to things like civil rights and interracial marriage and gay marriage. What do you see there?
Well, if you read the opinion, and I've read the whole 98-page thing, Justice Alito goes to some lengths to specifically indicate that he believes in the doctrine that was handed down by Chief Justice Rehnquist in a prior decision, that there are unenumerated rights that we infer from the Constitution. In other words, this is not going back to, well, if it isn't actually written specifically in the Constitution, it doesn't count. But the standard for those unenumerated rights, and he gives examples of, for instance, the right to birth control, to get birth control without government interference, that was established in the Griswold case. But part of why that is different, and part of why things like the Obergefell decision, the gay marriage decision, are different, is because this has been widely accepted. It has become now part of the American tradition. And for those things that have been widely accepted and are part of our tradition, the what Alito makes clear is that the court will not be in a business of taking away well-established rights. That's never been the case with Roe. And because Roe from the beginning has had strenuous opposition, which is obvious. Right now, you'll notice that there's nobody agitating out there to try to invalidate the literally hundreds of thousands of same-sex couples who have married. So I don't think that that's under any kind of realistic threat at all.
What do you think about the idea that I think that there's been a lot of language pushed, including by Republican senators Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska? Do you feel that there's any repercussions, any changes in the way hearings will be conducted for future justices, given the fact that it appears, the term settled case law is anything that I understand. To the extent those folks, it seems like there's some justices who said one thing and are now potentially doing another when it comes to Roe versus Wade.
I think that's a bad rap, and I think that's unfair. And there's actually, in the Wall Street Journal this morning, they run quotations from all of the three Trump judges, Barrett and Kavanaugh and Gorsuch, and all three specifically, when asked about abortion, said that they had their job was to maintain an open mind about it, but that it was established case law. It was settled case law, and they all said that precedence is important. But they all had qualifications that left it very open. Because otherwise, frankly, if they had said, no, no, we're not going to reconsider the Roe decision or any aspect of it, they wouldn't have been confirmed either, because they would not have had the kind of the united Republican support that they got.
So essentially, the defense is that they said what they had to say to get the job.
Well, they said what they had to say, but they qualified it and made it very clear. No one can look at anything that was said by any of those justices if you listen to the context. And you can hear the hearings, and they're being pushed, and they're being pressed, and they're dodging, which is exactly what Justice Ginsburg had recommended and what basically everyone has done who has been confirmed on either side. And there were very strong conservatives who voted, for instance, for Sotomayor and Kagan. Lindsey Graham, who was a ranking Republican on the Judiciary Committee, Lindsey Graham voted for both of them to confirm both of them. So basically, this idea of not asking justices who are judicial candidates for confirmation to make a firm commitment about a case that they are likely to hear. And that, again, is why Roe is different, because this has been challenged. And it was changed somewhat by Casey, which added this whole undue burden standard. And basically, in other words, what Casey established is, yes, you can limit the access to abortion by law, as long as it doesn't impose an undue burden on the mother. And what does that mean? Well, that throws it back to courts for more and more cases. Right now, it's getting thrown back to state legislatures. And again, I think there's no question at all that here in the state of Washington, the only difference is going to make an abortion is to make Washington something of an abortion haven for states like Idaho that are likely to move in the other direction.
Right. Let's talk about the midterms here, because I expected when this news came out, Republicans who had been trumpeting this idea for decades would have a lot to say about it and be pretty enthusiastic that what they wanted seems to be right on the horizon. But they've been pretty quiet for the most part. Do you see this as an upcoming election strategy? Because banning abortion is unpopular publicly in the U.S.
Well, it depends on the state. I mean, there are
sure.
states where it's very popular and you have overwhelming majorities, including a lot of local Democrats in states like Texas and Oklahoma and Idaho. So the point is, this is a big, varied country. Mm-hmm. And one of the advantages of our constitutional scheme is that states are not supposed to be identical. We don't have identical laws. We have different laws when it comes to voting and how you run elections, and that is not a matter for the federal government to decide. And you have different... Now, when it comes to fundamental rights, like the right to integrated schools, and I'm talking about Brown versus School Board, when it comes to something that is specifically referenced in the Constitution, where it says grants people due process of law and equal protection of the law in the 14th Amendment, regardless of your race, that's the kind of thing that a state can't decide, well, we're not going to follow that. You have to. But on this particular issue, one of the things that I think is the reason that Republicans need to be cautious is there's a stunning statistic that hasn't been discussed enough, and I'm going to be talking about it on the show a little bit this afternoon. And this is verified. 54% of all abortions, the majority, are medical abortions, meaning pills. They are, and you know, is any Republican out there or any pro-lifer really want to make illegal the morning after pill, or a pill that you take usually, it has to be in the first 10 weeks of gestation. And this is a very, very different matter than talking about the surgical abortions that represent the minority of all abortions. 95% of all abortions in the United States, and this is according to Planned Parenthood, Alan Guttmacher Institute, 95% of them occur in the first 15 weeks of pregnancy. So this Mississippi law that the court was actually looking at in the Dobbs case, the case that everyone's talking about, that would have very little effect on the overwhelming majority of abortions, which are before 15 weeks.
But Michael, what about the Texas law that allows you to sue?
The Texas law is ridiculous and will not pass ultimately. I don't think it will pass judicial muster. And again, it's in badly written. It's ill informed. The Oklahoma law, if anything, is even worse. And the idea of trying to, for instance, I believe the Oklahoma law would also impact the availability of medical abortions, abortion pills, basically. Mm-hmm. And the idea, I don't think there's really fervent pro-life feeling that says that you shouldn't be allowed to take a morning after pill. I just don't believe that that's there. But that's the kind of issue that we're going to be getting on a statewide level. And again, I'm actually glad that it's not going to be a polarizing or vital issue here in the state of Washington, because we have a clear, obvious pro-choice majority in this state.
That is Michael Medved. 770 KTTH is where you can hear his show this afternoon. Michael, it's always a treat to be able to fill in and talk to you on a Friday.
Well, thank you very much. Look, I have Bill Barr on the show today, Ooh. Which I'm very excited about, because he, more than anybody else, has been very consistent about blowing up this Stop the Steal nonsense, the big lie that people talk about. And he was, even when he was Attorney General of the United States. So it'll be fascinating to talk to him and about Trump's attempt for another term.
That sounds great. Thank you so much, Michael.
You bet. Great to talk to you guys. Have a wonderful weekend.
You Thanks, Michael. Too. More G and Ursula Show after this. Stay tuned, everybody. Fresh Friday here on the G and Ursula Show. G and Ursula, both out. Myself, Aaron Mason. Mike Lewis on my left, filling in. Hi, Mike.
I am filling in for Ursula.
I'll be G.
We've established that. You're G.
You be Ursula. I'll be G.
Heather's Heather,
as always.
Chef is Chef. Nick is Nick. It's the whole crew coming to us now, live via the miracle of telephone technology. From 710 Seattle Sports and the show called Mike Salk. It's the titular Mike Salk. Morning.
I feel titular this morning. Thank you, Aaron. I appreciate the wonderful intro. Yes, that feels great. A little dirty, but ultimately great.
Hey, I mean, it's a real word. Look, I got to pull the curtain back a little bit. I saw you're on the phone with us now. I saw you in the building not minutes ago.
I think he's calling from the bathroom.
Are you in the parking lot?
I'm not. I left a few minutes ago. I'm just getting to my house, as a matter of fact.
Look at this guy. Yeah. All right. Look, Mike, we gotta talk about a few things, and Mike Lewis has been itching.
Well, when I think of Mike Salk, I think of European soccer, and I think of the Bundesliga, personally. And I know that he is just dying. In fact, during the Sounders match this week, I don't know, Mike, what did you text me 60, 70 times? Like, every time there was a pass. It was extraordinary. Yeah. And I got to say, I love your enthusiasm for the new Beast Quake. It's now the what? The
Raver-something
Quake? I don't remember quite what it is.
That was 60 or 70 times. That was one for each time there was somebody writhing on the ground.
So, Mike, as the sports expert here,
What should we talk about? And then we're going to turn this over to you, and then we are actually, why don't you? You're the expert. You ask us questions about sports.
I love asking you guys questions about sports. Honestly, you're two of my favorite people around to talk sports with, to be honest.
Thanks, bud.
You know, this weekend is rookie minicamp for the Seahawks. So coming off of the draft last week, which for non-sports fans sounds like the most boring thing in the world, but for football fans has become, you know, other than like the playoffs, arguably the biggest moment of the football calendar, because it, you know, the untold promise of what your team could end up being. And by all the, you know, according to all the experts, the Seahawks have had probably the best draft they had had in a decade. I wonder if that tilts the meter for you guys at all.
You know, I guess that what I would say is, I mean, given that this is the time of the year, the prognosticator point of the year where they all come out of their closets and then we never hold them to account when these predictions do or don't come true. We never give them credit, never hold them to account. How do we even know at this point whether it was the best draft class? Just in terms of sort of hope,
well, we don't.
Right?
Right, we don't. But I think what we do know is that they've struggled drafting for the last 5 to 7 years. They just haven't had the same kind of amazing success they had at the beginning of the run for Pete and John, you know, where they drafted Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright and Cam and Earl and all those guys who went on to be, if not Hall of Famers, but core members of a Super Bowl team. They haven't had that kind of success rate recently. And at the same time, each year we're sort of criticized for weird drafts that didn't quite make sense to people. And this year you have a draft that made sense to everybody. They got, you know, big fellas early that are hard to come by. They got great value with some smaller guys, corners and wide receivers later. I mean, they filled needs that they needed. They got guys early who play the most important and impactful positions on the field. And so, you know, I think what you're looking at is a team that really is trying to build the same way they did leading up to their Super Bowl season in 2013.
So what about QB? Because we're Russell-less this year.
He's no longer playing for the Seahawks?
Yeah, have you
heard? Did I miss something?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, I got to go. Quarterback, that makes me got to go. We don't have one of those. I'm going to take off. No, it's a good debate. And when you look at their quarterback room right now, there's probably nobody in it that you look at and say franchise quarterback.
Right.
But I think this is where, if you're the Seahawks, you got to remember that the only thing worse than not having a franchise quarterback is having the wrong franchise quarterback or believing that you have a franchise quarterback when you do not, because now you're committed to somebody and you've got to build around them and spend 2 or 3 years on it until eventually you find out, whoops, sorry, you've got Brandon Whedon instead of, you know, Peyton Manning, and that's a disaster. They leave themselves open now to go find that guy next year and try to build up the rest of the roster first.
Can we talk about the Mariners for a second, too? Because I got really excited about baseball this year and really enjoyed the first week or two. And then the Mariners went and Marinersed, and they've been on a bit of a slump lately. What do you see coming up this season?
Yeah. Well, it's been a huge mess, obviously. They've lost 8 of their last 9 games. And Aaron, I don't think you're alone. Like, a lot of people were like, okay, I kind of suffered through the last few years knowing that it was a rebuild and it was all leading up to this big moment. All right, you tell me you're winning, go win. And right off the bat, they started doing that. They jumped into first place. And then they went on the road, and it's just been a complete disaster. Just the bats all went quiet at once. I think the good news is most of the guys who haven't hit will hit. Right? It's not all rookies and people who've never done it before. You got some guys with a pretty good track record who are just underperforming right now. And, you know, the law of baseball is that it's not played over the course of 9 days. It's played over the course of 5 or 6 months on purpose.
Right.
Those averages tend to equal out in a much, you know, longer season. But yeah, there's some concerning things, and they built with some, you know, young guys, Jared Kelnick, Julio Rodriguez, that you want to see get going. I think at the end of the day, this will be a good team. I don't know whether they'll break the playoff, you know, streak yet or not. I don't think they're going to turn into a bad team because they've got too much talent on there. But this is still part of a process, and whether or not this is the year, we're not going to know that for a whole bunch of months.
Yeah. Classic baseball. Mike Sauk, host.
How it is, man.
Host of Mike Sauk on 710 Seattle Sports. What time's your show on, Mike?
Oh, it's at 6 a.m. You're welcome to join me anytime. at 5. I know how much both of you love that early
We do love those early hours.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Thanks, Sock. Always a treat, man.
Thanks, Later. Mike.
We'll be back with scenarios coming up right here on the G and Ursula Show. Aaron Mason, Mike Lewis, filling in. Stay tuned, everybody. G and Ursula Show. Mason, Mike, filling in. It's time, ladies and gentlemen, for one of my favorite parts of the show. It's scenarios! I always want to rap this part. Hey, yo, Bo knows this. What? And Bo
it's tempting,
knows that.
I tell you what.
Bo don't know Jack. Bo can't rap. All right. We're going to do something a little different today. I hope you don't mind. Text line 888-973-5476. That is 888-973-CHIRO. I'm going to introduce a scenario because I have an actual question. And I need some help. I'm in a situation and I need some help.
And we are here to help.
I have a job interview later this afternoon, and it's via Zoom. And so my scenario, my situation that I need advice on is twofold. Is there anything different that I should be doing because it is a remote interview, because it is over the internet? And then what are some of your... job interview best practices, your tips, your tricks, and feel free to send them in even after the segment because I will read them all.
Can I offer one?
Yes, please.
I'll offer two, actually. So test the. I'm assuming you're using a laptop or a phone.
Correct,
a
laptop.
Right, laptop. Test all the get on Zoom and mm-hmm. test the microphone and test and test actually the lighting as well.
Ah.
And make sure that that is actually. And also, if you got a lousy internet connection where you are. Maybe head somewhere where it's better
mm-hmm.
because that kind of stuff can be really distracting through the course of a Zoom interview if someone's all freezing up or cutting out.
Yeah.
Also, if they don't, like I did an interview with a guy once and he was like not looking at the camera. His computer was adjusted, so it was like half his face. And I thought, that was a little distracting.
This
so
is G. Like, Scott. Every time I get in on a video call with him, I see his chin.
Exactly.
Nice chin, G.
Sort that stuff out in advance. But that would be mine.
That's solid.
Remote interview tips. Let's see. Like the last job I interviewed for, I did not get. So I might not be the best person to give you tips.
Well, don't say what you did, and then he'll know not to do it.
I answered all the questions incorrectly, and the job was far outside of my position and my experience.
My biggest weakness is caring too
much. My biggest advice is be qualified, which I think you are for the position that you've explained to me off air. I think the biggest thing you can do is somehow try to make a personal connection, because the hard thing over Zoom is establishing rapport.
Right.
I did a remote therapy session during the pandemic,
mm-hmm.
and it was brutal for me because just the glitchy way that the tech works,
yep.
People aren't necessarily looking you in the eyes. When you want to look them in the eyes, you look at the camera, not at the screen.
Yeah, that's weird.
So that would be the number one. Look at the camera, the little red light, so they know that you're actually looking at their eyes, because otherwise you look like you're staring at their...
How am I supposed to look at anything other than my own face? Don't we all do that?
Can I also offer another little bit of suggestion?
Yeah.
I think the best people that I've interviewed when I've hired people, you know, when I was an editor in various places or even at the bar, I like people who ask me questions.
Mm.
So prepare some of your own.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's just a general interview
advice. Yeah, love
because
that.
Someone who comes in with questions is someone who's curious about it and has thought a lot about the gig. And I like that. I think that's actually good policy.
One more for you. Always follow up. So whoever you're interviewing with, find their company's org chart, their email address, whatever it is, and send them a personal follow-up as a thank you for the interview,
mm-hmm.
and include something that you either forgot to say an additional idea that you had that you did not have time to share, but show that you have both gratitude for their time and then also use that as an opportunity to briefly expound on something that you didn't get to in the interview or you wanted to clarify. Like, use that as an opportunity for a further connection.
Yeah, yeah.
And don't use a fake background like the Eiffel Tower or something like that. Just that's a bad idea.
I'm on the beach.
I'm going to ride off of what Mike just said. Yeah, it's kind of frustrating when technology won't work in your favor, and that's always in the back of your mind to make sure it's working well. But appearance is also the second most important thing, in my opinion. You want to make sure you're looking good on the screen. No fake backgrounds. I'm not in that favor either, but they really like it when you're sharply dressed.
Crazy about a sharp dressed man.
Just make sure, don't make that mistake, not wearing any pants and standing up, walking around, they see that, you know, that's
no,
a cardinal
I'm good.
Sin
I got,
there.
I got a haircut yesterday in anticipation, not only for the job interview, but for Fresh Friday. Just keeping it fresh.
Oh, that's sweet.
No, that's good. That's good.
Do you really need to dress up for a remote interview?
Yeah, man.
Just the upper part. If you're gonna, just don't stand up. If you're
it's the newscaster technique, right? It doesn't really matter what's in the bottom floor.
You don't want to pull a tube in. That's that was true. His name, right? Senator Mark Tubin.
Jeffrey, the New Yorker. CNN contributor. That's the one.
It's an unfortunate pulling a Tubin.
Yeah. Well, I'm here on a Fresh Friday, getting fresh, folks. We got a whole nother hour of the G and Ursula Show. Are you excited? I'm excited. I'm excited on this Friday.
I am excited, too.
Agree to disagree. Mike and I are going to come to fisticuffs at the 11 o'clock hour. It's right after this break. Stay tuned, everybody.